Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
When I was having my first child, I spent a lot of time when I was pregnant thinking about giving birth, worrying about the birth process. At the time, the parent education that I got didn't really talk that much about what happened after birth. And it certainly didn't prepare me for breastfeeding. I kind of vaguely knew I wanted to breastfeed, that there were some health benefits to the baby, but I was rocked by the breastfeeding journey. I just remember a few weeks in where we've tried lactation counselors and nipple shields and supplemental syringes and wires and tubes. I tried craniosacral therapy and I was in pain. I was exhausted and my baby was struggling to gain weight. I remember I was on the floor of my apartment after a sleepless night trying to feed my baby and I was just sobbing. I couldn't believe how much breastfeeding rocked me to my core. During that time, I was pumping. I also ended up supplementing with some formula, all of which I am incredibly grateful for. And though I have had a pretty easy breastfeeding journey since, my learning curve was so steep. And as the years have gone on and I've gone on to breastfeed other babies, I have become so much more open about how and when my babies get fed. Life is complicated for moms. We have to learn this whole thing on the job. However you feed your baby, I want you to feel completely supported and guilt-free. Hey, mama. Welcome to the Motherly Podcast, where we have honest conversations about modern motherhood. I'm Liz Tennedy. I'm a co-founder here at Motherly. I'm also a mother of 5 kids myself. Today's guest is Victoria Ficelli. Victoria is a lactation consultant, postpartum doula, and author of the new book called Feed the Baby, an inclusive guide to nursing, bottle feeding, and everything in between. In our conversation, Victoria shares her modern, holistic, and inclusive approach to feeding. She talks about her own experience parenting a child with a disability and the shame that she initially felt as a lactation consultant who was not able to nurse her own baby. We also geek out a bit on the pretty cool biology of nursing, breast milk, formula, so much more. This episode is full of bits of wisdom and resources. I hope you enjoy our conversation as much as I did. Victoria Ficelli, welcome to the Motherly Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
So I'm curious what you thought motherhood was going to be like before you became a mom yourself.
Ooh, starting in hot and heavy. Okay. Man, I was a baby expert, like a literal actual baby expert. I had been a nanny for a decade. I was a postpartum doula after that. I spent my days in postpartum houses and I found the feeding part of that really compelling. So I went back to school and went to UNC for this program in lactation consulting. I was in community hospitals. I was in level 3 trauma centers. I was in NICUs. I was in birth centers. And I had really seen it all, or so I thought. I mean, I had seen some pretty extreme hard stuff, and I think it's natural to be like, well, that won't be me. And I was so excited because I do love the postpartum so much. And I knew enough to be scared. But I remember the feeling of being at my baby shower and feeling like I was standing on the diving board. And I was like hoping the water would catch me and knowing that my community was the water. What I didn't know is that I was on the high dive because my daughter had what's called a hypoxic event during her birth. So she was deprived of oxygen. And so she immediately went to the NICU and as a result has a disability called cerebral palsy, which is a motor disability. And so I got exactly zero of the postpartum I expected. Very little of what I knew about parenting was helpful to me because I was parenting totally at the margins. And I didn't know if it was going to be okay. Like I could not imagine my life being okay until she was about 6 months old and we went to the house of now very close friends who have an older child with CP. And I was able to look around and be like, okay, their life is okay. Like, this is going to be okay. And that's something I'm actually really passionate about is talking about disability and parenting. It's my belief that if we take a really broad lens of disability, learning disabilities, including intellectual disabilities, at some point in your parenting experience, you will probably parent a child with a disability, whether that's temporary when they break a leg and you suddenly need to use a wheelchair, or if that's navigating the IEP system because they have a food allergy. Or in my case, someone who has a pretty impactful lifelong disability. And so we have this impulse to be like, I'm a regular mom or I'm a special needs mom. And I actually really resist that category. And I think it's really powerful to be like, I'm a mom. Parts of my parenting are different because of who my kid is. I have to navigate ableism in a way that maybe other people don't, but we all parent the kid in front of us. I just didn't know what kid I was getting. And I, like most people, assumed I was getting one kind of kid, and that's not what I got. And I love the ways that the kid I have opened up my world. But I thought it was going to be regular hard and I was going to really nail it. And it was unbelievably hard and I completely failed. And that's why I'm so grateful to have written this book. We don't need another book about how to be amazing and excellent. And so I got to write the book from a place of failure. I got to say, I am the most a feeding expert that you can be in this world. And I failed at breastfeeding. So now you get to be free. And so I think like the really easy answer to your question is I sure as heck expected to breastfeed and I sure as hell didn't.
What a transformation. And thank you for your just vulnerability and sharing what you have gone through. And also I love the reframing of every kid will have some needs that we don't expect and living in a world where that is destigmatized, normalized, talked about, even centered, right? That expect the unexpected within motherhood.
And learn from each other. One of the things I've noticed is I'm in the big leagues in the disability wise. I'm not in the really big leagues, like the folks who go in and out of hospitals, who deal with kids who live in pain. Those are the really big leagues. I'm in the like medium big leagues, right? And so some of my friends who come in and out of disability, whose kids have invisible disabilities, whose kids have temporary disabilities, who are just navigating the IEP system for the first time, which for folks who don't know, that's an individualized education plan, which is how you access additional services and support for a kid in public school in the United States. And they're scared to come to me with that because how dare they compare their struggle to mine? But actually, I have so much help that I can give. And it is in sharing that I feel less alone and they feel less alone. And instead of separating myself, that's like, you can't even touch this. I'm a different kind of mom than you. And be like, no, we're the same kind of mom. And you are actually allowed to ask for my help here. And I think that's one of my big goals is opening up those conversations and being like, yeah, I'm going to honor the ways that we parent differently, but also give a lot of space for us to learn from each other. And I think my experience would have been a lot less scary if that had felt more open to me. And I learned so much from the folks who do have to deal with surgeries, who do have to deal with lots of testing in the hospitals and those kinds of things, because sometimes I have questions of things that feel new and scary to me, and they're so generous in giving me that information.
Can you take us back to that moment? And I know you're saying this in a way to make the point, but you failed at breastfeeding, right? Using that language. And you're a baby expert. How did you process the kind of mom you thought you would be, the breastfeeding experience you thought that you would have? Did something help you let that go? What was that transformation and journey into acceptance like for you?
You know, I say in the book that motherhood melted me like wax and reformed me. And I'm not someone who takes to change easily. I am not someone who lets go lightly. And I am so proud of changing my mind. And I think that's the overall message of this book, is that good parents don't succeed at one thing. Good parents respond to the situation and let it change. And I had a real moment. We had finally made it out of the NICU, weaned off the feeding tube. I was pumping and we were bottle feeding, and I had seen every one of my amazing colleagues. We had seen the speech therapist. We had seen the editor of the Journal of Human Lactation, the best lactation consultants in the whole world, the massage therapist, the chiropractor, the dentist for the tongue tie. We had done all of it. And I came to a place where I realized that I could keep white knuckling this, and it was going to take away from other aspects of my kid's care. And actually, one of my biggest regrets is that I kept pumping for 9 months. I wish that I had been able to fully let go, to really listen to what I knew about health outcomes, which is that they're not that big, and let myself be okay. And then I did a lot of trauma therapy about it. And then I wrote a book that in many ways is a memoir that let me heal myself, because I'm able to take that failure and give it to you and say, here is the gift of my failure. You are absolved of the pressure to do this thing.
And it's so interesting to hear from you, because as an IBCLC, of course, you believe in breastfeeding. You know all the statistics. You work to help others who want to succeed at breastfeeding. And I have breastfed all 5 of my kids, and yet every kid has been different and hard. And sometimes I've wanted to give up and was lucky enough to be able to push through. But even now, I'm wondering what the end of my breastfeeding journey looks like. It's so personal. But you, as someone who's credentialed and this expert, it's so powerful to hear your story of how you experienced what you wanted to do with breastfeeding. You had the science behind you, and it was incompatible with the reality that you were living. And I think that so many of us go through that for a lot of different reasons. So you wrote this book as an IBCLC talking about all the ways we can feed our babies. And frankly, even that is controversial in some ways, right? Can you talk about that a little bit, of what is challenging in the breastfeeding community talking about not breastfeeding?
Yeah, I'm very scared putting this book into the world. I don't love conflict, and I don't want pushback from my own colleagues. And also, sometimes you have to stand in the truth and the light. And the reality is, first of all, I stand in the truth that there are no bad tools. That any tool you can overuse, any tool you can underuse, but a Phillips head screwdriver is not morally superior to a flathead screwdriver. And what I needed, and what I think all parents need, is first of all, the baseline assumption that at some point in your feeding journey, you will probably pump, use some amount of formula, and nurse. Most people use all 3 of those tools at some point, in different quantities, depending on their life, depending on their baby's health, depending on how their baby was born, depending on their hospital stay, depending on how much weight they lost in the first week, depending on what their work looks like, all of those things. But most parents do all 3. And so leaving people without real information about one of those three tools does not actually serve us. And so it is not actually my job to say one of these methods is better than the other when I know as a lactation consultant, there are times when formula is appropriate and important. So who am I to not learn about that tool and help others understand that tool? Because I need actually all of the tools to keep all the babies fed, to keep all of the mental health well enough, to go to the jobs, to care for the other kids. We actually do need all three of those tools. And so the book is sort of a choose your own adventure where if you know, I'm not going to do any amount of nursing, that's not in my plan, skip a whole chunk, carry on to the next section. And that was really important to me, that you can choose your path, but that all of the tools are there when you need them. You're like, I am really clear that I don't want to use formula. But if it becomes medically indicated, there is the information to know how to pick one. And I didn't have that information. I was an IBCLC, a postpartum doula, but because our field is so focused on human milk and away from formula, I actually used a formula I would no longer recommend because I didn't know enough about formula. So I am looking for my field to change because I do stand against predatory marketing of families. I do think that there's a political aspect to how some of these enormous government contracts function, hospital contracts function. There are real ethical questions here that are independent of families' needs and the substance of formula. And if we don't fill that gap by truly learning about those things and neutrally working with them, then we leave a vacuum that will be filled by marketing, which in the end doesn't actually serve families in finding what would work best for them.
Very brave of you to say, and just glad to have you on saying what you're saying. And it really does need to be said. And through line in this book is supporting mothers and parents, because I think in this transition from person to parent, the orientation of the medical world and frankly, our lives, our culture becomes, well, whatever's best for the baby. And in some ways, it feels like we've almost overcorrected that the mother or the primary parent's needs are somehow secondary. Yet in this dyad between mother and baby and parent and child, the well-being of both parties really does matter. And I think we are generationally living through this moment of saying mothers matter, your opinions about this experience matter, and the context, you mentioned politics. We don't have paid family leave. What is this culture doing telling me to breastfeed when I have a major structural impediment to breastfeeding? Who are you to say breast is best when I can't afford to stay home and breastfeed, right? And the number one reason we don't breastfeed is because we can't stay with our babies. And so I do think it's important to just help to rebalance this conversation about feeding to the reality of the moment that we're in and acknowledging the real trade-offs and choices that moms have to make in deciding how to feed their babies.
Yeah. And if we start setting that up as there's always trade-offs and you get to make risk-benefit decisions based on your family's values, that's going to actually carry you through all of parenting because that stays true. So let's develop that skill early. I do think a lot of our parenting culture, like if you've encountered fair play or any of sort of the stuff around division of labor and default parents, I think a lot of that starts in the newborn phase. I'm interested in ways that we can redistribute labor in the family from the beginning. There's a reason why my book is very gender neutral. I want dads to feel comfortable reading it. I want co-parents to find places where they can do more from the beginning, even if you're breastfeeding. And then, yeah, to your other point, I think all things being equal, in a perfect world where everyone has access to everything they need, there is a slight, that's how I read the research, people will disagree with me. We have very few controlled double-blind studies of feeding because it's very difficult and unethical to do. We have one very robust study where the double blind was support in breastfeeding versus no support in breastfeeding. The result of that, which I think is also salient, was that the group that got support breastfed and the group that did not formula fed. And this is actually a little bit old. So this formula is not even comparable, I would say, to modern formula. And what we saw was a small reduction in GI infections and a small reduction in ectopic dermatitis, dry skin. That's all I got for you. Do I think that the orofacial aspects are fascinating and the polyunsaturated fatty acids and the relationship of the gut and the brain and the autoimmune factors we don't yet understand are incredible? Absolutely. I'm an enormous nerd. I love all of that. And at the end of the day, the kids are all right. So with that understanding, to go to someone and say, I'm going to give you no health insurance, no paid family leave, the health insurance you may or may not have does not cover lactation. I will provide one lactation consultant with banker's hours for your entire hospital. I will provide little to no food assistance for formula and maybe insurance coverage for part of a pump. Okay, now the most important thing that you could possibly do in your parenting that's going to define whether you're a success or a failure is to exclusively breastfeed for 6 months, adding complementary foods until mutually desired weaning after age one. That is not fair. That is not a fair setup. That is not all things being equal. So in the world that's actually in front of us, the fight is to get what we deserve as families, true leave for both parents, insurance coverage for lactation providers, training for lactation providers of diverse backgrounds. Lactation providers who understand the full breadth of infant feeding. That's where the fight is. But instead, we flip it on parents and we say, this is all on you. I struggled with nursing for real biological factors. And I also say, breast is best is ableist. Not all bodies make milk. Not all bodies can nurse. But beyond that, that's not a fair structure. And so what I want to move to is there's no best. You have to feed them. It's a baseline. The fight about whether breast milk is inherently better than formula is actually very boring. We're just going to feed them. And it's like body neutrality. It's not about fatness is more amazing than skinniness or anything. It's just their bodies. And we're neutral about it. And neutral about feeding. We don't sit around telling diabetics pancreatic insulin really is better than synthetic insulin. No, we say, oh my gosh, what a biomedical miracle that we have made synthetic insulin and now we can keep people alive with it. Isn't that outstanding? Formula is a biomedical miracle. It's a tool we get to use. I think we should use it discriminately, factoring in what families actually need. I don't think we should market it aggressively and predatorily directly to parents, just like we don't with pharmaceuticals.
Love it. Let's talk about another aspect of just the ground that we walk on as parents who need to feed our babies. I remember with my first, all I could think about for me, this is me, for my entire pregnancy was giving birth. You know, in our culture, we just have so many stories about it. I was so scared and it was hard. Don't get me wrong. And it was lightly traumatic for me that first time. But it was over for me in 24 hours. And what I was utterly unprepared for was breastfeeding. And so 10 days into trying to feed my baby, and it is not going well, and I haven't slept, and I was just sobbing on the couch thinking like, is my baby going to survive this? I'm sitting here in Washington, D.C., like worried about the survival of my small child. I really, truly felt that vulnerable, you know, was weighing him after feeds, trying to make sure he was getting enough to eat. And now, fast forward a bunch more kids later and years later, like I can literally breastfeed in my sleep now. Literally in my sleep, I could do it. But it was so hard and so heady and heavy in those early days. So what can we do to better prepare new parents for this feeding journey that, especially in the beginning, is high stakes and exhausting?
I say that breastfeeding is like driving. It's like life-threatening and so intense and this whole set of motor skills that you've never encountered before. And it's so overwhelming and so stressful to learn. And then you get to where you literally don't think about it. That's the learning curve. Formula feeding is like walking. For most people, it's pretty straightforward. It's kind of the same amount of effort. It's always the same amount of effort. It's like a little bit of effort. You can't do it in your sleep. It's also not that hard. And then pumping is cross-country skiing. It's an enormous amount of effort and it stays that way. So what I've tried to do with the book is both prepare people with one kind of neutral, clear voice about loosely what's the deal with each of those so you can mix and match as needed. Because I do think when you're in the Facebook groups and stuff, it's so colored by people's experience in the same way that like too many birth stories is actually too much information. What you really need is providers you feel like you trust so they can guide you, and then understanding what your options are. So I'm trying to do the same thing with the book. Here are your options. None of them are morally superior to one another. And then the way that the book is written is that I have folks read about the different kinds of feeding and then what to expect the first 2 weeks. And then after that, it goes developmental chunk by developmental chunk. But I feel like reading just through that will give you a good sense of preparation. The other piece that I think people miss specifically with nursing, though I do think it also carries over into some techniques with bottle feeding, is we don't see it very much. Presuming that you were one of the oldest kids in your family, maybe your younger siblings benefited from being around you nursing your kid, from knowing they could call you for help. But we just don't see it very much. And so that was one of the challenges of the book, is if I'm making a book, how do I enable you to see it? And so my amazing colleague, who is a trained midwife, a tattoo artist, an illustrator, and an infant massage therapist, illustrated the book. And I really tried to find really diverse bodies, really real bodies. None of this round, exactly C-cup chests, but like a real range of bodies, and illustrate these, but that's still really static. So when I have an image and then I'm like, okay, you're going to fish hook your baby and it's 2 a.m. and you haven't slept in 4 days and you're like, I don't know what you mean. I have also put QR codes in the book so that you can, with your phone, go and find an instructional video of what that looks like with a real newborn and a real breast, which is hard to find on YouTube or Instagram because we don't put a lot of breasts in those spaces for obvious reasons. And so that was one of the challenges of the book, is like, how do I give people like a real visual of actually what it looks like, not to latch a doll onto a puppet, actually a close-up of what does it actually look to latch? Just getting some of that into your brain of having watched someone do it helps you get ready to learn those motor skills yourself.
No, there was something in the book too. I think you talked about the way the milk comes out as this sort of shower head. And I had had breasts since I was 12 years old. And when I was a new mom, I am telling you, I was a few months into breastfeeding before I realized that I actually had this shower head.
You thought it was a faucet?
Yeah, I thought it was a faucet. And I'm like, this is my body. How come I was not prepared for how my body was going to work in one of the most high stakes circumstances of both of our lives?
But also how strange that, like, first of all, you like go through part of your life without this organ system, and then this organ system develops on your body, and then it has this sort of social sexual function. And then all of the sudden it has this whole other function that springs into action. Like, that is weird. Mammals are wild. That's a lot. And is a really important part of our lifelong health monitoring. Knowing what's normal in your chest and feeling them every first, I always feel them on the first, that can make a really big impact on your cancer health. We aren't taught to know our bodies and trust our bodies and really report when something is off. And I hope that this can start that for some people. And so that's another thing I recommend in the book, is I have sort of a typology of different chests. And I encourage people to actually like sit with the question of your chest and just really get to know what is normal for you. And some of that information, not size, but shape, can tell us like, oh, you have risk factors for low production. we should talk to someone about that and make a plan.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I learned a lot from reading the book about how this system works, from just the biology 101 of what it even means to be a mammal and to make milk. Then you talked about fresh milk as a living tissue, which gives me a whole other way of imagining what breastfeeding is. Tell us about some of the science of what happens both inside the breast and within the baby, and even the mutual relationship and feedback system between the bodies, because there's a lot there. And I know you geek out on that.
I totally geek out on that. I mean, I think mammals are fascinating. I think the idea of species-specific milk is really interesting. So the idea that each species makes milk that is uniquely suited to our babies. And so I think it's really interesting to think about, what do we learn about breast milk from formula? Because formula is based on breast milk. Because you cannot just feed a baby cow's milk. Do not do that. Do not make homemade formula. That is very dangerous. Because our bodies process milk. It is such a processed food because it has to do all of a kid's nutrition for a year, basically. You can't just feed your kid asparagus. That is not nutritionally complete. So in order to make a nutritionally complete food, you're going to need a whole mess of stuff in there. And in particular, we have some of the most undeveloped babies, right? A zebra has a baby and that baby just like runs around. We have to wait a whole year for them to do that. Because you can't push out a one-year-old. That's not going to work in these bodies, these upright pelvises. So we have to have our babies so early that they are A, a little dumb. They're just not that bright yet. And B, really, really, really dependent on us. And in a lot of ways, nutritionally immature. So we're expected to make this totally dynamic food for them and develop their massive brains. Human brains are just enormous and they use so many calories, especially doing the amount of development you do in the first year. There's a lot of work to be done there, and that is fed by sugar. Humans have the sweetest milk because you need a lot of carbohydrates to feed that brain. The sugar that we make in our bodies is called lactose. And then this is another thing that people see corn syrup on the back of formula and they get really nervous. Corn syrup is just sugar. Nutritionally, it's fructose instead of lactose. You can also get formulas with lactose. And we have to add more sugar to cow's milk or goat's milk, which is the basis of most infant formulas, to make it have enough carbohydrates for a human. If you just feed them cow's milk, they will not have enough carbohydrates to develop their brains. I also find it fascinating that there's polyunsaturated fatty acids, which are not to feed your baby. They're to feed the bacteria in your baby's gut. That is so cool. And actually, if you look at the guts of exclusively formula-fed babies and exclusively breastfed babies, their guts look very different. Their flora looks really, really different. Until 6 months, when they start eating food, and then it moves into matching their families because of the way your family eats. All of that is so cool. And I think it's important to remember it totally matters and it doesn't matter at all. And the thing that I actually think matters enormously that doesn't get talked about, people love to talk about milk, but the stuff that really gets me is the orofacial development. So the idea that babies are born with very recessed chins and an ability to suck, but very underdeveloped muscles. They also are born with bones that can move and squish because they got to get born. And in particular, plates on their skull that are not fused that are designed to move. So buildings and bridges where you build in a certain amount of flexibility so the structure doesn't break. So the idea is that that head's supposed to be able to get really smushed either in utero or in birth, and that that's going to be just fine. But the built-in mechanism to pull that back into place postpartum is using the muscles of the back, aka tummy time, and using the muscles at the front, aka nursing or working hard to eat a bottle. So actually using those muscles. So when a baby has a tongue tie, which is like a tight piece of tissue under their tongue, they can't move those muscles correctly and they can't develop their mouth and face in the same way, which often impacts how they eat later on, how they breathe later on, or how they speak, because all of that is foundational. So that's the part I actually think is really fascinating, is that nursing is designed to make your head round again, and that can be replicated with bottle feeding.
Let's talk about the moms and parents who are feeding these babies, because we've talked about the ideal world in which we are feeding and raising our babies, and we don't live there. And, you know, in a lot of ways in the US, I think it's important to point out that we don't live there politically, but we also don't live there socially and culturally anymore. And many of us don't have those built-in support systems to come around a new family and support us in the way that we need. You dealt yourself with a postpartum mood disorder. Talk about what it means to be well as this new parent, feeding this baby, the responsibility. What does it take in our lived reality to be well in the midst of the demands of that first year of life?
I mean, for me, it took a whole lot of therapy. It absolutely took life-saving medication and finding ways to sleep regularly. I was very high risk. I experienced PTSD from my child's birth. So did my spouse. I think it's important to remember that spouses can also experience trauma in birth and postpartum and can also develop mood disorders, that we need to create space for them to also access support. The tool that I recommend that exists in this real world is a thing called protected sleep. So protected sleep is the idea that if someone is struggling with their mood, which looks a lot of ways, we have that picture of the woman crying next to the window. It's like, you're not alone. But for a lot of us, a postpartum mood disorder looks like intrusive thoughts that your mother-in-law is going to drop your baby. It looks like obsession with how the bottles are cleaned. It looks like anxiety that your baby is going to wake up. It can look like, I feel like I'm not enough for this baby. It would be fine if I disappeared. It can look all of those ways. And so if you are generally not feeling like yourself, the first line of defense is 4 to 6 hours of uninterrupted sleep. So the goal is for everyone to still be getting their 8 hours, which sometimes means, I mean, this is another enormous unreasonable expectation, is that we're like dressed and doing things days postpartum, let alone months, right? Like you really should be in bed, like you have the flu for like a while, recovering and sleeping on and off throughout the day.
And some cultures still practice and honor that, but mainstream American culture, absolutely not.
Absolutely not. So that's part of it, is I would love to see the postpartums reshaped more in that way. But sometimes the only way to achieve the sleep that you need, because you do have to get the kids to soccer and your spouse doesn't have any leave and someone has to feed the dog. So the way that that can be achieved is this protected sleep. So the idea is earplugs in, phone off, you're in a different part of the house, and that baby will get fed one way or another. I have ways that, like, if you're exclusively nursing, of when you would pump to do this, and you go to bed and nobody is allowed to disturb you. And when you wake up from that 4 to 6 hours of sleep, do you feel better and like yourself again? If so, repeat as needed. If you do not, that is diagnostically really helpful that you need more tools. You may need medication. If it feels emergent, you can call the 24-hour line that your birth provider gave you for birth, or you can call Postpartum International. There are many amazing warm lines. A local doula agency, whether you're their client or not, will absolutely connect you to support for perinatal mood. So all of those things, I think, are really important.
One topic I do want to discuss that we haven't overtly talked about is, what does it mean to be inclusive in all the ways that you've brought forward in the book about your own story and other people that you encounter? What does it mean to be inclusive when we talk about breastfeeding and chest feeding? And how did you decide what language to use that felt honoring of the various experiences that mothers and parents have had?
Yeah, this was one that definitely continued to open up and evolve. I'm queer. My spouse is non-binary. I'm Latina. I'm autistic. My daughter is physically disabled. So like I'm coming in with some diversity markers, we'll say. And when I started my career, my passion was really expanding gender in lactation care and giving safe space for trans people to breastfeed, for non-binary people, for queer families. That was really my lens at the time. And our field has made tremendous strides in that. Where it gets really complicated is when you're really doing inclusion, when you're really talking to a big, big world and a big, big audience, you can lose some of that specificity. And so what's tricky is that I do love talking about chest feeding. I do often use chest as a neutral. But chest feeding also maybe doesn't land for some folks, that breastfeeding feels really like the right words to them. So where I ended up is that I clinically use breasts to refer to the organs. I generally use chest to refer to the area. And I use nursing as my gender neutral for feeding a baby at the chest. So that was how I approached gendered language. In terms of race, I wanted to be direct and clear about the fact that our medical system, and in particular, our medical system around reproduction and children and the state's involvement therein, is different for different parents. And in particular, Black and Native parents, for instance, are at a higher risk if they talk about drug use with their pediatrician, if they talk about pain and needing pain management with their OB, if they talk about co-sleeping. The stakes are different, and it's okay to honor that. A conversation about milk donation may feel different to someone whose family members were enslaved as wet nurses. These are valuable parts of that conversation, and I cannot speak to all of them because I am not Black and I am not Indigenous or Native. And so I did try to sort of direct people in those places. And then, of course, because my child's disabled, I want her to grow up in a world where she sees disabled parents. And I have been lucky enough to work with disabled parents who were generous enough to lend me photos of them. And so it is my absolute honor to show parents using wheelchairs. You can't always tell, like you couldn't tell who in the book is autistic or physically disabled necessarily, but they're there. And I know they're there and they know they're there. And then also to really sit and learn from one another, like what can I learn about what it means to breastfeed from the Indigenous Milk Medicine Collective. And then beyond that, I wanted to include lots of family stories. What you often find in books like this is a cluster of quotes. And what I wanted was fewer really rich stories that really told you something. So maybe you're actually really going to connect with the story of a trans dad whose wife carried his eggs, because part of their feeding journey relates to you. Or maybe you used an egg donor, even though you're straight. And what does it mean to carry a baby that's not genetically related to you? Or what does it mean to live in those fears or navigate your gender? A lot of us, even cis women, have an interesting experience of gender postpartum. Maybe your kids are not autistic, but you're going to really learn something from hearing the parent of an autistic child who's struggling to find childcare choose to formula feed her second kid. And so I wanted stories that tied into the content, but grounded you in like, wow, everyone's identities are really complicated. Mine must be also.
One more question before we go. At Motherly, we believe that motherhood brings out our superpowers. I don't think that moms are superhuman, but that motherhood brings out wisdom and resilience and forces and power within us that sometimes we didn't even know was inside of us before we became mothers. So I'm curious, what do you see as your superpower?
My superpower is connecting people and asking for help. I am really good at asking my community for what I need and accepting help. I had no choice. We would not have survived otherwise. The need of having a baby in the NICU, of emotionally moving through what we went through. I also had a medical crisis after Evie got home. And so I deeply needed help and I got really good at asking for it. And what I learned from that is that we do not build community giving help. We build community receiving it because it's the vulnerability of asking for or accepting help that actually builds those strong bonds.
Well, thank you for all you've done to give help to our listeners who are maybe thinking or struggling with breastfeeding, learning about it also through your new book. And thanks for sharing so vulnerably what you've gone through. There's so much wisdom in there. Victoria Ficelli, thank you for joining us on the Motherly Podcast.
Thank you so, so much for having me. It's such an honor and welcome to North Carolina.
Thank you. Thank you. That's it for this episode. Thank you so much, Victoria. And thank you to our listeners for tuning in to the Motherly Podcast. We'll be back next week with another great guest. You don't want to miss it. As always, we would love it if you spread the word about the Motherly Podcast. So if you can right now, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Leaving a review takes no more than 30 seconds, but it really helps other people discover our show. And I read all of your feedback. The Motherly Podcast is produced by Jennifer Bassett with audio editing from Joel Edinburgh. Our associate producer is Olivia Hendrickson. Our music is from the Blue Dot Sessions. I'm your host, Liz Tennedy. Thank you so much for listening.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.